and welcome to the Face of Pro-Life. Today I'm speaking with Eileen Biacchini, who is the chairwoman of the Gospel of Life Society in Norwalk, Connecticut at St. Mary's, right?
Right.
Thank you for joining us. My mom told me a story recently, and I knew I wanted it to bring it to you and to our viewers. And I think it's going on all over the country, but it just seemed unbelievable to me that this actually happened. She had a really good friend who lived in Florida that kind of convinced her to move down to Florida as well. Not too long after my mom had moved down there, this woman wasn't answering calls or anything. And she had previously introduced my mom to her hairdresser. And so they were going to get their hair done at the same place. And so the only contact my mom had a knowledge about this woman was through her hairdresser. And he had told her that she wasn't calling her and everything because she had had a nervous breakdown. And so she wasn't talking to any of your friends or anything. So a year or two passed, and I guess my mom found out through the grapevine that this Mary had died. And so she was getting her hair done, and she was talking to her Dave, her hairdresser, and she said, "Yeah, I heard that Mary died. You know, what happened?" Because she's fairly young. She was like in her early 70s, and he got all choked up, and you could tell he knew, but he didn't want to talk about it. But as the time went on, he started to open up and said that Mary had asked him to come to her house and do her hair. And when he got there, she said that she was going to Jesus today, and she wanted her hair to look nice.
Oh, no.
So apparently Mary was in the end stage of lung cancer, and obviously coherent, just talking and everything, and she just wanted her hair to look nice so she could go to Jesus. And he kind of was leery, and, you could tell he knew something was completely wrong, but as time went on, the people from hospice showed up, her family shows up, and here's this big orchestrated event where they're going to euthanize this woman. And she asked this David to stay, but he knew it was wrong, and he couldn't stay.
Yes. I would think most of us would feel disgusted by it. I know I would. To actually, first off, to kill yourself is morally wrong. Has been.
I know.
And B, to make a production of it. And
a
brag that you're going to Jesus.
I know.
I mean, most of our best saints weren't sure that they were going to Jesus. We're very concerned.
I know. So, I mean, when my mom's telling me this, I'm thinking, it's sad that this woman feels compelled to kill herself. But what's sadder is that no one's telling her, when you take the life and death issue out of God's hands, you may or may not be going to Jesus.
That's right. And there is a commandment that says thou shalt not kill.
So I was just floored. And even my mom was very, very upset, thinking that, her whole family was, around, and as if this were, Thanksgiving dinner,
apparently her family that was around, none of them were religious. And because if there was anyone amongst them who was religious, that person would have spoken up.
Do you think?
I think so, because what you're dealing with is the soul of this woman. She thought she was going to go to Jesus, but not when you
But they're participating too. Obviously, if you stand by and watch this happen or encourage it or, like you say, don't say anything, then you are complicit.
You're perpetrating the murder. So it's like being an accomplice. Yeah. So you would be considered guilty in most Christian, I believe, religions. If you let a sin happen, especially something as extreme and morally wrong as that, you will be judged as if you yourself committed that sin. At least that's the way it works in the Catholic faith.
But how can this actually be going on? I mean, in this woman's home, hospice comes in, kills her, and nobody says anything about it. This can't be isolated. This can't be like one-time event. Is this going on all over the country? We have laws against assisted suicide, I thought.
most of the states in the United States, 45 states actually, have laws against assisted suicide, and they're strict laws, they're statute laws. But there are some states that may be a little bit more liberal than others. Mm-hmm. And assisted suicide, there's a difference between assisted, it sounds like this might have been assisted suicide. Assisted is when the physician actually helps the person to commit the suicide or enables the person to commit the suicide by giving the person the pill or the medicine that they're going to take or in various ways making it possible, giving them the instructions. Like, for example, an organ, the physician might give them the pills and the nurse might give them the pudding, and they put the pudding in the pills and the pudding, and hopefully they don't choke to death. Hopefully their death is easy. I think there's a total misunderstanding in Oregon by patients who have selected to do assisted suicide, and possibly in other parts of the state, in other parts of the country. That it's an easy death, that it's a smooth death, that it's a gentle death, they say, a death with dignity. But the fact of the matter is, most of the time there's problems, there's coughing, there's vomiting, the person may not die instantly, may take 3 hours, and sometimes die in, or they think that the person is dead, and then come back again. Some people justify making assisted suicide legal by saying, well, if you don't do it, and these people who really want to commit suicide try to do it themselves, husbands and wives, mm-hmm. and we had a couple of cases like this in Connecticut, they'll do a terrible job, they'll botch it up, and the person will suffer greater pain and trauma. Well, the fact of the matter, that's also going on with assisted suicide.
Right. Well, my understanding of even in states like Oregon where they have, you know, legal assisted suicide, that the person has to be fairly sane, I would hope. Now, this woman's had 2 nervous breakdowns in the last year. I mean, are you sure she's sane?
No. And that's the problem. What happens, again, those who are against assisted suicide say it's difficult to have enough safeguards.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happens is, over time, the safeguards become relaxed.
Right, right.
So in the beginning, for example, in Oregon, they started with strict rules. But then as they proceeded, the rules got softer and softer and softer.
Well, because not enough people were killing themselves.
And nobody's checking up.
Right.
Where's the regulate? Where does it say that they have to keep thus records? And who's checking the records?
I mean, just look at the abortion. They don't keep records whatsoever. They don't have to. Yeah. Now, if you have a hernia operation, those records are very clear. You know, they have to be kept, you know. But for abortion and apparently now assisted suicide, there's really no
same
regulation
thing.
Or enforcement.
Exactly the same thing. So we have no idea how many people and how they're dying and what suffering they're going through. The proponents of assisted suicide are not responsible. They're not behaving responsibly.
Yeah.
And the rules are getting more lenient. Mm-hmm. They're ignoring the rules. And now the latest thing is people are actually dying without their permission, or they're being killed as if they gave permission for themselves to be killed, and they didn't. So I have 2 cases like that. One was a pastor Joshua in Ontario, and he was brought to our group's attention, the mm-hmm. Gospel of Life, by one of the promoters against assisted suicide in Canada. And he said, please get your people, if you can, to pray for this pastor. He didn't have a good living will, and he didn't have a healthcare proxy. And so what happened to him is he had a heart attack. And this commonly happens. It could be a heart attack, it could be a stroke.
Mm-hmm.
And when he had it, he was not able to feed himself. As a result, because he didn't have a healthcare proxy or an advocate, a person who would fight for him there, the hospital appointed someone. And that person decided that the rule is that if you can't feed yourself, then you will not get liquids and food. So they didn't give him anything. They just starved him to death. And they stopped him for a while, and then the group that's active there got a lawyer who was a bit willing to come and fight for him pro bono. The lawyer arranged for him to get some food, and he got better. But he had a seizure from all the trauma and the starvation.
And yeah.
Right, exactly. And again, he couldn't feed himself. And that was after that he actually died. And so we had all my Gospel of Life 500.
You mean with socialized medicine in Canada and all the great medicine that they have there, that this could happen?
Yeah, it happened.
And it was just because he couldn't feed himself.
Watching, and not being able to do anything.
No, he was conscious.
Was he conscious? I'm not sure. I'm not sure if he was conscious.
Well, it doesn't really matter, but, you know.
No, I think he was conscious in the beginning, phase one. Phase
right.
two, after he had a seizure, I think he was unconscious.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, and we know that that's basic. Food, water, basic.
Yeah.
You know, you give that to your dog, you know. I mean, those are basic things that you give, you know, because whether the person can feed themselves or not.
Yeah.
You know, that's
in
not...
Old, can you imagine...
That's not extraordinary measures.
In olden days, in the 1930s or the 40s or the 50s, when a person would have a heart attack and they couldn't feed themselves, can you imagine the family saying, okay, they can't feed themselves, so now we're just going to let them starve to death and leave them alone? Can you imagine how ridiculous that would appear? Why isn't it seeming to be...
What a baby. They can't feed themselves, but...
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Right. So I don't know how these people are getting away with this. And so it is happening. Another case, a woman, I think it was Oklahoma, Julia, one of our doctors, we have a prevent-assisted suicide committee. And we have doctors and lawyers on it. We have about 20 people.
Wow.
And we're working hard to prevent it in Connecticut. And one of the doctors, who's actually not from Connecticut, gave us a case. He said, please, I know this person, Julia, pray for her. Yeah. She was a young woman, married, and she had a brain operation that went wrong. Yeah. So she had some damage in her brain. And this really hits me because guess what? I just recently had an aneurysm and brain surgery. So anything could have gone wrong.
Right, there, but for the grace of God.
Right. Exactly. And so it went wrong. He decides.
Who's he?
The husband. Same as Shivo. He arranged for her not to get food and water. And so she's dying. And... Rita Marca, who is...
You got to be careful who you marry. I mean, this is the thing. Come on. That's the first thing you ask them, you know, when you get married. It's like, okay, I'm incapacitated. Are you off of me or not? You know, I mean, this is ridiculous.
I think some people, you really, truly think they're doing the other person a favor by letting them die. Don't they realize that starvation is a very painful death? I mean, I've gotten the story.
I mean, just think of how hard
story.
Your stomach hurts when you haven't eaten in a couple hours. I mean, can you imagine days?
Right. Has anybody seen them go through this starvation? Anyway, she is in the process, and again, our Gospel of Life Society is all praying for her. And we alerted pro bono lawyers. I don't know what they could do. I don't know that they could be very much more successful than they were with Terry Schiavo.
Yeah. I mean, so some of the things, you know, when Terry Schiavo was going through all this, you know, everyone was talking about living wills, and pretty much the opposition, you know, the pro-death groups were saying, oh, you need a living will so that, you know, we can kill you, you know, when you're incapacitated. But what it sounds like is what we really need to do is have a healthcare proxy, somebody... Not your husband, who, you know, really has your best interest at heart, or understands at least, you know, your faith, you know, really.
What your wishes are.
Yeah.
And would implement them.
Yeah.
Somebody who doesn't have an ulterior motive.
But, you know, some people don't understand that, you know, nobody would say, oh, you know, I would like to be Terri Schiavo. I would like to. No, of course, nobody wants to be Terri Schiavo. But once you're in that position and you are Terri Schiavo, then you do want to live.
Yes.
You know, I mean, that's the thing. That's all you have, life.
Right.
And you do want to live. So you can't say when you're perfectly healthy and running around and you're 20 years old, if I were on machines, I wouldn't want to live. You don't know that.
Yet a lot of people say that.
Yeah.
They think that.
Our message would be we need to err on the side of life.
Maybe we need to show the ugliness of starvation.
Yeah.
Yeah. A lot of people don't realize that it's... And doctors don't explain it.
Yeah.
You know, they say that the body shuts down. The stories that most of them get is that the body shuts down by itself, and starvation is a natural death, the way it is with animals. Animals, when they starve to when their organs begin to shut down, they don't want to eat, and they starve
right.
to death.
That's
well, we're not animals.
Yeah.
You know, so we're very different.
Right. And if there's any chance, too, that, you know, either recover or any kind of, any time on Earth is beautiful. You know, any time with your family, any time with music, any time with the sun, you know, shining in your face, any time smelling the aroma of flowers, that's a gift. That's beautiful. You know, so if we spend more time trying to celebrate the person's life while they're here, no matter how incapacitated they are, that rather than, you know, trying to off them as soon as possible, I mean, not only are they getting, you know, further gift of life, but you're also getting a gift of love, you know, being able to show your love for these people.
I've seen cases where I just had one of my best friends die, and she was part of the Gospel of Life Society, and she is one of the ones that actually formed it with Father Margie before I came on the scene. And I have to say that if you are in good standing with the church, and she was, and if you receive the sacraments before you die, as you say, those last moments are absolutely beautiful.
Right.
She was radiant. She was radiant like a woman is who's having a baby.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, and she was the one, you might have read it in one of my updates, that kept saying, after she got the last rites, we couldn't shut her up. And she kept saying, I believe, I believe, I believe. And she was... Father Markey and I talked about it, and what we think is that in those last moments when you received the sacraments, even though you've been receiving them all your life, when you know you're going to die or possibly going to die, you cooperate with them much more
right.
with your whole heart and soul.
Yeah.
And so the result is a great transformation.
Right.
I saw it in my husband. I saw it in my father. And I thought, oh, my goodness, this is beautiful.
Yeah.
And they talk about assisted suicide as being a dignity death.
I know.
There's
a
nothing
dignified.
Like
I know.
This.
I know.
Yeah, so it's beautiful.
I know my mom's cousin was dying of breast cancer. And luckily, she didn't want the mind-altering drugs. You know, she wanted to be clear-headed, and you know, she wanted to be able to live out her last days, you know, in total, you know, coherence. And my mom went out there to be with her, and when she went into the hospice, and of course, you know, when you check into hospice, you know, they expect you to go within
it's like
a couple of
sentence.
I know
it's terrible.
And so the thing was that, you know, this is my mom's cousin, you know, they'd known each other since they're little kids, and you know, my mom was there and talking with her, she had the best time. You know, she talked about when they were little kids and their, you know, all the people that they missed, their grandparents, their moms, their, you know, aunts and uncles. And, you know, there was a couple of times the hospice people came in and were just like, couldn't believe, you know, there was so much life in this room.
It's just the same person.
I know.
It's wonderful.
Why is that so odd, you know. Shouldn't every room be like that? You know, I mean, and my mom said, you know, it was beautiful, you know, just to be there with her. And when she took her last breath, you know, mm-hmm. and she didn't take the drugs, she didn't, you know, she just went to the Lord, you know, exactly how it was intended.
How wonderful.
You know, it was
and
so weird.
I see also what I've seen is, in the last weeks of life, even if the person is in a great deal of pain or anguish, that it's an opportunity for them and their families to improve or to repair
their relationships,
the damages.
Yeah.
Right. And all that happens in that. So God tells us we're supposed to forgive.
Yeah.
But people, there are people who can go through their whole life resisting or having difficulty forgiving another person, especially a person who's close to them and hurt them and their family.
Yeah, but what do you have to lose when it's the last couple?
But when it's when you're ready to die, you know, so all kinds of great things happen, and I can just see God over this person saying, "Good, good, it's exactly what you're supposed to do." But now we want to rob these people of these opportunities.
And I don't think people understand. I was talking to a nurse, and, you know, a lot of times they will deny, this is crazy to me, they'll deny the dying food and water. Now, I can understand food because, you know, maybe they can't really, but, you know, even an IV or, you know, water, you know, they're afraid, well, they're going to get congestive heart failure. They're dying.
Yeah, right.
So they get congestive heart failure.
Water.
It's they can't relieve them from the pain. Well, when you're so dehydrated because you're not getting water or any kind of fluids in you, the pain medication isn't getting to the nerve endings anyways because your blood's not pumping, you know, to all of those nerve endings. So we're crazy. The idiocies that we're imposing on these people, you know, like starving them to death or keep dehydrating them to death and then pumping them full of morphine. There's only one reason to be giving them morphine, and that is to off them, you know? It's like...
Yeah. Yeah. And like we've said before, is what we need to help people to do is to understand pain medication, educate them on hydration, treat their depression. You know, have you ever taken a look at a hospital diet? I mean, I just came out of the hospital, so I noticed. And I've been just learning about how much sugar there is in various types of products.
Oh.
So I figure in the breakfast that they gave me, I had one cup of sugar.
Wow.
Now, what does that do to depression?
Yeah, it can take you...
You forget it. You know? So it's not just a matter of getting them to see a psychiatrist. But these people who are depressed, who I think in terms of suicide, pump them up. Give them a good, healthy diet. Send somebody in to help them with their depression.
Mm-hmm.
Get them back in touch with their religion.
Give them something to live for.
Right. Right.
Yeah.
And there is something to live for right up into the moment of death. Your soul.
Yeah.
What's going to happen to yourself? Remind them. I think I have a personal theory that we all come into life knowing. We come into life as little souls.
Mm-hmm.
When we're first born. And we know who we are. We know we're children of God. We know we are loved. And then we come into the world and slowly.
Get chipped away.
Yeah, right. And remind them who they are. I think that's a wonderful opportunity and a wonderful chance to do that. I just bought a book. I was at Stockbridge, Divine Mercy.
Oh, yeah.
And they have a little pamphlet on how to take care of the dying, and I haven't read it yet. But I think we need to get better at this. I think we do.
It's so funny that you mentioned Divine Mercy, because when my mom was out in Arizona with her cousin had gone through all sorts of, you know, she was into witchcraft, and she was like bizarre. You know, she'd totally given up her, you know, her Christian faith and everything. But when she was dying, my mom found a rosary in her room.
Oh, how interesting.
And I said, "Oh, Mom, you gotta get the Divine Mercy pamphlet." She goes, "Oh, you mean this one with Jesus on it?" She had a Divine Mercy pamphlet in her room.
Wow.
I do not know how that got there, but it was amazing. And so my mom was saying the Divine Mercy with her.
See, that's what you're supposed to be doing, because
exactly.
Supposedly, if you say the Divine Mercy before a person, just before a person dies, they go straight to heaven, as if they got the last rites.
And my mom had, you know, baptized her and everything. I mean, she, like I said, she had kind of gone off the deep end on, she was totally into animal rights activism, but she believed in abortion and all this stuff. And it's, you know, but at the end, you know, here she had a rosary and Divine Mercy. It was just, and she died a peaceful, loving death with dignity.
Yeah.
Nobody, mm-hmm. you know, doped her up. Nobody gave her anything to, you know, suppress her respiratory. She just died in comfort and in love, you know.
And that's the way it should be.
Exactly.
It should be that way for everybody.
And my mom says, you know, that's like one of the best gifts that was ever given to her was to be there. And so when we say that, you know, like this woman wanted to die, you know, go to Jesus, you know, with their hair done and her family there. That was taking away from her family. It was taking her away from her family. And her family allowing her to do that was taking precious moments away from her, too.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before we go, and I know we only have a minute or two left, I want to point out to everybody who's listening that they really should have a pro-life group in every parish, in every church, because it's through the pro-life group and the research that they do on topics like this that people will learn about this. People have been asleep at the wheel.
Mm-hmm.
They have to wake up. They have to realize what's going on, and guess what? We are responsible.
Yeah.
If these people are opting to do assisted suicide, it's because the majority of people are just standing back and letting it happen, and we just can't do it. We are our brother's keeper, and we need to step in and do whatever we can, wherever we are in life, whatever position mm-hmm. we're in life, is to have a pastor, Monsignor Greco, if you ever see this, from St. Francis of Assisi in Weston. And he used to say, bloom where you're planted, bloom where you're planted. And it's so true. If everybody could just do what they could do, but maybe through a pro-life group in
right.
their parish, maybe a lot of this wouldn't be
happening
today.
And you don't
today.
Need a whole lot of people to,
yeah.
you know, two people start the pro-life group, and then it
right.
just blossoms, you
right.
know, the more things that you do. And there's so many resources out there to help you.
Yes.
The American Life League, you know, has a very great website. The Gospel of Life Society has
right.
great information to help you get information out to
I'll
your
parish.
I'll
even create a packet and send it to anybody if they want it. I'll help anybody who wants to start a pro-life. We need more of them
right.
and more of this kind of education.
Yeah.
yeah.
Thank you so much for coming and finally get to talk about
it. Been a joy.
And I hope that you'll come back real soon.
Thanks.
Thank you for joining us today. We hope that you've learned something. We hope that you learned that every moment of life is a gift from God that shouldn't be taken away from anybody. And we will hope that when you look in the mirror the next time, you'll realize yours too is the face of pro-life. Join us again next time.